This episode is sponsored in part by Boost Commerce. Looking to boost conversion rates? Of course you are. With Boost AI Search and Filter, turning more visitors into buyers is as easy as flipping a switch. Imagine a search bar that's actually helpful, where shoppers find what they want in a snap. With Boost, you get advanced product filters so customers can sort by size, price, color, and more. Plus, AI-powered search results mean no more endless scrolling. Need to highlight your best sellers or new arrivals? Boost merchandising tools make that easy. You'll get personalized, frequently bought together, and related items recommendations to help increase cart size. And the best part? No coding required. If you need a hand, Boost support team is always there to help. New customers can use the code KURT, that's K-U-R-T, to get 30% off for their first 6 months. Valid only for first-time customers. Start your 14-day free trial today by heading to the Shopify App Store and downloading Boost AI Search and Filter. Turn browsers into buyers with smarter search. Today on the unofficial Shopify podcast, I'm your host, Kurt Elster, and we're going to hear about the sock that launched an agency side hustle. No, the sock that saved turtles. No, you know what? We're going to let our guest today, Lucy Jeffrey, explain it to me, because somehow she went from banker to e-commerce store owner to wholesale, fair wholesale expert. There's quite a lot to unpack here and some good learnings. So we're going to hear those from her. And really, when you have a seasonal product, that's so difficult. There's another problem she's had to solve. And so, Lucy, thank you for joining me. Let's get into it. Where are you located?
Currently in London. Thank you so much for having me. It sounds quite wild hearing all of that playback. It's a bit of a topsy-turvy journey for sure.
Tell me where we started in this journey.
So I was in banking. So I'd graduated university, joined a grad scheme at HSBC, and was just in a standard kind of corporate job that was fine. It was a steady salary, but it wasn't really lighting any fires underneath me. So I'd actually started Bearkind, my e-commerce business, as a bit of a side hustle, never really thinking it would go anywhere. But at the time of me starting it, there was a big wave of people trying to reduce single-use plastic, and I was like leaning into that. So my very first product was actually reusable stainless steel straws. I'd seen a friend whip one out of her bag in a bar and just thought, oh, that's weird, what are you doing, you've got a metal straw in your bag. And then they became a bit of a trend after that, and I'd like jumped on that trend right at the start. Began with drop shipping kind of all different beautiful colors of straws, and moved into a few other products that I dabbled with, but nothing really took off. Things like reusable tote bags and t-shirts made out of plastic bottles and things. And the socks came later, because there was a video going around the internet of a sea turtle with a straw stuck up his nose. Quite traumatic. But because of that, turtles became a bit of a mascot, because we were all about just reducing the amount of plastic going into the ocean, harming these animals. And I wanted to give back to the turtles in another way. So I formed a partnership with the Turtle Foundation. And the idea was being that I'd do a profit donation model back to the charity, back to the turtles. But the straws, there was still quite a tenuous link. So I actually thought, right, I'll bring out a product with turtles on it. Started with socks, purely because I was like, this is, you know, a fun, funky product that I can make colourful with cute little animals on it. I don't have any kind of background in fashion, so I wasn't going to go too heavy down any other kind of clothing route. And it was just turtles to start with. So that was my original sock that my customers loved and then started demanding other animals. And we've kind of grown since then. So that was nearly 7 years ago now. We've got nearly 100 different designs now.
These are bamboo socks. The site is Bearkind, B-A-R-E, bearkind.com. And that's on Shopify?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're on Shopify, have been since the beginning. So it started off drop shipping straws. Then it moved into, yeah, I held the kind of products myself. And now we've got, yeah, numerous different manufacturers. We ship out of the UK. And turtles are still a strong seller. They were my original sock, but we still have them. They're still a very good seller for us.
So as you went from, you know, drop shipping straws, then into selling these socks, what's the moment where you realize, hey, this could be a full-time gig?
Yeah, so 2018 was when I started the company. It wasn't until a couple of years later, so smack bang in the middle of COVID, we're all working from home, and I had a bunch of stock that I wasn't really sure what to do with. So I had about 5 designs at that point, between 5 and 10 designs. And I actually wasn't sure where to take the company at that point. You know, the world had just kind of blown up in our faces, and it, you know, there was, people were having existential crises. And I was like, do I want to stay at work? Do I want to work for a charity? I have no idea. And so I thought, right, I'll just take out a small loan, chuck it into Facebook ads, just see if I can clear through the stock and then make a decision. I could have gone either way, closed down the business or not. However, it just took off. Like, I sold out of all of my stock within like a month. So it's the most I'd ever sold. And to give context, it's not much. I honestly think it was like £5,000, like in a single month, which doesn't sound like much, but honestly, that shows how tiny the business was at that point. And I just thought, okay, well, I do actually think I'm onto something here, that I've managed to sell through that stock like pretty rapidly. So I quit my job. That was at the end of November. So we were about to go into another lockdown for Christmas here in the UK. And yeah, I handed my notice in, and that was now over 4 years ago. And it's been a wild ride. Amazing. It wasn't rash. I definitely weighed up the pros and cons. And my partner at the time was saying, you know, go for it. You know, he was also at HSBC at the time. So he was, you know, saying, you know, I've got a steady income, so just take a risk, go for it. And that was 4 years ago. And in the last couple of years, he's also quit to join me. So we've kind of gone all in on the socks. But yeah, no, it felt really good. I've learned a lot. It was the right decision for me at the time.
So once you start selling these bamboo socks full time, what's the next hurdle we run into?
Always cash flow with a product-based e-commerce business. Like the next year, so 2021, I actually went to my university and got a grant and then some investment. Actually, they're quite a good university in the fact that they have this kind of like accelerator for students and alumni as well. So I went to them for money because it was getting to the point where I was like, I want to grow this, but my blocker is cash. Banks aren't going to lend me money. I'm too risky. I'm an e-commerce business with no kind of really good, strong proof of sales yet. So I had that opportunity. So without that, I think it would have been a much slower growth curve. But again, each year, and as we'll get into, I'm a super, super seasonal business towards Christmas. So naturally, it is quite hard to manage that balance of I need to get stock in for Christmas, and then I have a really good Christmas, and then the money like slowly goes down and down and down until the next Christmas. But it's, you know, it's summertime really here that I need to be paying for my Christmas order. So it's managing that balance is tricky. And we have quite a high MOQ as well to hit with socks.
Most of your sales are going to happen in Q4. Roughly what percent?
How
seasonal is this business?
About 70% of our revenue is Q4.
I wear socks 365 days a year.
I know.
70% of the sales happen in Christmas?
We're so gifty. We're a real gifty product.
So in a business like that, I feel for seasonal businesses. I spent many years working in a bike shop where it's like, you know, we do everything in 3 months of the summer. How do you survive the other 9 months?
So our B2B channel is kind of what keeps us going through the rest of the year. So we've done pretty well on a marketplace called Faire that entered the UK in 2021. And we were kind of one of the earliest brands onto that platform where we just had a lot of growth in that space. So we're finding a lot of like independent retailers who own their own gift shops. You know, might be small chains, but it tends to be those kind of indie gifting retailers that really liked our product. And they do stock us through the year. And I think their sales are still seasonal because socks sell well at Christmas, but they're a bit more consistent because they've got customers going in, they've got that footfall. It's a £10 per pair product. So it's quite an easy add-on for, you know, at the till. So our retailers do really well consistently through the year. So we have that consistent channel. But it's still hard work kind of managing that seasonality. And that's again why, and we'll get into it, is why the agency came about, because it is about kind of managing that cash flow and realizing, well, we almost need another revenue stream to kickstart us into the Christmas season and balancing that.
Fair is this B2B marketplace, and they've got, you know, an official sales channel and integration with Shopify that works nicely. And you're not the first Shopify merchant who has told me, like, wow, Fair has been really great for our business. Tell me a little bit about Fair from your position as Shopify merchant, how it works.
Yeah. So, yeah, as you said, it's a marketplace. So I liken it to Etsy, but for B2B. So it's independent brands like mine looking for independent retailers. So you're not going into huge chain stores. It tends to be a business owner communicating with a business owner, and they want to stock your product. So they can go on, and it's a huge marketplace, loads of products. We link through our Shopify. So that means that we can pull all of our product listings into Fair. So, you know, basically the work's been done for us, and then we just pull it across, some optimizations to change it kind of for B2B. But at least most of the work's been done. All of product photography pulls across as well. The other thing that we like about it pulling into Shopify is orders will also pull across into Shopify if you want. And the reason we want that is because all of our Shopify orders get automatically pulled to our 3PL warehouse. So everything's like happening automatically in the background. It's all synced up. So rather than previously, we'd have manual orders. So someone would come to us on email saying, hey, I want to order this, this, and this. By the time we get to them, especially at Christmas when things are moving quite fast, we have to turn around and say, great, we want to put this order through, but this stock level is now gone and this and that. So it just removes all of that friction, and they can just shop 24/7 whenever they want. They don't even need to talk to us realistically. They can just shop and that's it. It's done. So it's been a massive game changer for us.
So really, you plug it in, and provided people can find you and want what you're selling, you're making these higher volume orders. Like, I assume there's an MOQ. You don't have people just buying, you know, a single pair of socks at a discount.
It's funny you say that, because actually we preach starting with zero MOQ. We've tested this, right? So yeah, in theory, yeah, usually B2B is like higher MOQ. However, because Fair's an algorithm and really you want to be playing into that and just trying to get as many retailers to find you as possible, we've tested various different MOQs, and we have found that for us, zero works really, really well. And we're not really seeing many people come in and just buy one pair of socks. I think if anything, the smaller orders that come in, you can tell that they're just testing the waters. If anything, it's a sample order. So rather than doing like a free sampling process, they'll buy like a few different pairs. They might just be wanting to test the quality. They have no idea who we are really until they've like tested us, and then they'll come back and they'll order more next time. And we sit on the platform and we have a tag that says zero MOQ. So actually we preach that to people to say, try it out for your brand. If you can, you can set shipping costs as different. So they would have to pay shipping on that. But we've actually found that works really well for us.
So in theory, by getting on, we're adding this B2B wholesale marketplace. Now we're able to sell, you know, into a new channel. Ideally, these become recurring orders, right? If I buy your product, it sells in my store, I'm going to come back and buy more. So these are fairly ideal customers, it seems.
Absolutely, especially because a big problem for us is our AOV on B2C is about £30. Which is quite low, especially when you look at our like cost per acquisition on Facebook ads is like £12. Or it was last year anyway. So there's, you know, we don't have a huge amount of margin to play with, really. Whereas on B2B, although Fair do take a commission, unless it's our customer that we have bought to the platform ourselves, they take a commission. And then, yes, those customers are just spending more per order. So the cost of everything is just spread out. So the cost of the shipping, the cost of our fulfillment, pricing, and then obviously, yeah, hopefully they become a returning customer. And we have got a lot of customers that have been with us for 3 or 4 years now. So the lifetime value of those customers is really, really good.
Wow. All right. I like this, but how does that solve our seasonality problem?
Yeah. So other than the fact that it's a bit more of a consistent revenue stream. So actually Q1 to Q3, our split of D2C B2B, we're about 70% B2B. So it's quite a strong channel throughout the year. That completely changes. By the time you get to the end, you've got the whole calendar year, it changes completely the other way and goes almost back to 70% D2C, which just goes to show like how strong our own website is in Q4. But it's that revenue stream we're getting from B2B is really important for us through the year. But that leads me on to why we ended up starting this agency kind of almost by accident. So really what we were doing was sharing content about Fair and about our socks to try and get more people to buy our socks. So our target was actually, hey, retailers in the UK, this is what Fair is. This is how it works and you should buy from us. And we were putting those on YouTube. And we started naturally getting more people come to us and ask us about Fair because brands asking us about Fair. So brands like us saying, oh, I can see you're doing well on Fair. Like, should I be using it? Because people just didn't know what it was or how it worked. They hear the kind of headline commission and think it's way too steep. And so they kind of coming to us asking us for advice purely because we were very early to using Fair search keyword terms on YouTube, basically. So I then started sharing advice for brands on YouTube. So it was just kind of me coming on camera and saying, hey, we've done really well on Fair. This is what we're up to at the moment. You know, try zero MOQ, try this in your emails, try this. And people started really resonating with it because not many people were sharing this kind of advice. We've been very, very open and honest with everything that hasn't worked for us. We're very open with our numbers as well. So we'll tell them, you know, the revenue that we've got per channel and things. And as a result, we started realizing that this actually could be an income stream for us. So we started selling a digital course and then digital like templates to help with Fair. And then people started asking us to run their Fair accounts for them. And then suddenly we had clients paying us to do that. And I was like, well, this is an agency that we've just kind of made out of nowhere. But it is also a very consistent revenue stream. And as a product business owner looking at a service business, I was like, wow, look at all this profit margin. So it's very tempting when you look at it from that point of view. But obviously, it is also a lot of work.
Man, those order change emails suck. They're always like, I ordered the wrong size. I meant to change the shipping address. Oops, I was drunk. Instead of making customers email you that stuff, let them fix it themselves with Cleverific. Cleverific is a self-service portal that lets customers edit their orders without bugging you. That means you get fewer headaches, customers get faster fulfillment, and there's fewer returns overall. Everybody wins. Peter Manning, New York, cut their support tickets by 99% with Cleverific. You want in on that? Get 50% off the pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for listeners of the Unofficial Shopify podcast. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Done. Problem solved. That's Cleverific. So you liked Fair so much. You saw the potential there, but knew it didn't have enough awareness in the UK. Your solution was, well, we'll just educate people about it, start uploading to YouTube, and that naturally you, because you're one of the first people doing this, you become the authority and the expert in the space, and people reaching out to you saying, hey, can you help me with this? You're like, well, yeah. You know, whether I sell bamboo socks or I'm selling a professional service, the money spends the same. And so there's an opportunity here. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, absolutely. We just jumped on it, really. And I think the other thing that kind of solidified that we were doing the right thing in this space is Fair themselves were loving and still are loving the fact that we share all this content. Obviously, you know, we're talking about them and how good they are and the amazing things they've done for our brand. So it's, you know, it's only a good thing for them. But they also noticing that we're obviously dominating in this space on YouTube. So we're working closer with them now to kind of bring out content where possible. And we kind of go to their events. And when they started coming to us, and I went to their office because we have a brand success manager who works with us on our like Bear Kind account. So they look after our sock account. That's their job. So we'd go to the office to like meet with them and maybe film a video or whatever it might be. People would know who we were. Like, we're almost like famous in the Fair office, which is a really, really weird sensation for us. So I was like, okay, we're obviously doing something right because we've got people coming to us saying that they like our videos. And there's not much else on this content, on this topic, in this space. So we've just doubled down and kept going on the videos. So we release one every week. We've got over 200. We're definitely the biggest channel in this niche, and it is very, very niche, but it seems to be working at the moment.
That's really cool. And I definitely recognize some things in your story that I resonate with, right? Like being early, just happened to being early on Shopify, creating similar content around it early on, and then, you know, being recognized for it within that like microcosm of the ecosystem. But it'd still be, you know, it's different. It's cool. You're like, oh, this is like a sliver of what, you know, some celebrity is like.
Yeah.
It's like, this is, you know, 1/100th of that, but you're like, oh, okay, I get it now. It's kind of fun.
It is. So,
looking back, what do you wish you had done differently?
On Fair or just in general?
You know, with growing this YouTube channel.
I think we could have gone even harder at the start. I think I was nervous to go into it. I'm not actually that natural on camera. I really liked doing podcasts. That felt, you know, I just liked the conversation. But actually kind of talking to camera, filming that, you worry about what people are going to think, you know.
It's so different.
Yeah, yeah. And you just think it's a bit cringe sometimes, like what you're posting. And ultimately what I've learned...
Oh, you got to embrace the cringe.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
It's working.
Is just to be like, yes, this is cringe. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is what is working across YouTube, across LinkedIn, etc. So, and ultimately I found that people don't care. So probably the people that I'm most worried about what they think of me is the people that I know. So friends, family, you know, slightly further away connections. But I don't think they even watch our content. They've got no idea what we're really doing. If you're not in the space, you probably don't understand it. And they're probably looking at us thinking, what on earth are you doing? But no one really says anything. So I think I'd wish I'd got rid of that kind of anxiety earlier on and been like, just jump in and play, which is ultimately what we ended up doing. But it wasn't until really last year that we really kickstarted the YouTube even further. And we're like, yeah, let's really commit to this and really grow it. We were just kind of dabbling. And I think we could have gone harder earlier on, but I don't know. I feel like you could say that about anything, right? As now I'm seeing it as more of an opportunity. It's easy for me to sit here and say, wow, I wish I'd done this earlier.
Yeah. The hindsight's 2020.
Yeah.
You get survivor bias where you're like, well, it worked for me. Should have done that sooner, faster, better. How many subscribers are we at?
We're at 2,000 now, nearly 2,000. Yeah, which is so actually a really small channel, but like because it's in the niche, what we're benefiting from, like, so we've not done any outbound at all. Like, so all the clients that are coming to us, they find us via YouTube, and these are really high value clients. They're spending a lot with us per month. So although it's a fairly small channel, it's growing steadily. We only need a small slither of that audience to actually kind of come on board. Yeah, yeah. We don't need a huge audience.
Professional services.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a giant audit. Like, you could build a successful business off being a micro influencer. That is the power of being a micro influencer. It's quite incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think about it. And I'd actually say most of our audience is American. I think almost exclusively all of our clients at the moment are US brands as well. Fair's been around in the US, it's a US company, so they've been around in the US for a lot longer than in the UK. So I think naturally there's a lot more growth there. The US economy, the brands seem to be doing, although I know everyone's economy is not great at the moment, the US brands do seem to be doing better than the UK ones. We have pretty shallow pockets here in the UK as brands, I'd say. So the US brands seem to be more inclined to take on our service as well. But that just, you know, it's amazing that that's, you know, we're just here in our little, this is our home office, you know, growing our little YouTube channel in the UK. And we've got these US brands that find us because of YouTube. It's pretty impressive.
It is. It's fun. You know, ultimately, you are running two very different yet similar overlapping businesses. What's it like, you know, managing these two separate businesses?
Yeah, it can be difficult. So, I mean, me and my husband, we run the both businesses together. So the division of roles is very important for us. So, you know, what we're both responsible for, and it can be difficult. We're being very clear with each other on our direction on both. So we know that at the moment we're in off season, as it were, for Bearkind, although we're planning our Christmas order right now. To get all our stock in, we know we're in off season. So actually we've slowed down a lot of things on Bearkind. We've actually turned our advertising off, like to reduce kind of costs in that side of the business. You know, we've reduced our emails. So we're kind of going quieter on that because we've spent a good few years trying to make Bearkind a thing in off season, and it's been very hard work. We're really in a hamster wheel. So we're kind of leaning towards doing more on the agency at the moment, knowing that probably when it comes up to Q4, our thought processes will probably reduce down, if not stop, acquisition on the agency, and just keep our current clients and just deliver Q4 for everyone, including Bearkind. Because obviously for all of our clients as product brands, Q4 is huge. So we'll probably just reduce down acquisition and kind of bring that balance back in and then go again next year. So I think that's how we're kind of looking at it at the moment. And we've kind of balanced the team with that. So we've moved some of the Bearkind team onto Candid Founders because really that's where the work is at the moment. So it is a ginormous balancing act. And I think it's just open communication all the time on like what is and isn't working and where the priorities are.
You know what? It's a marriage on its own is not necessarily easy. Adding a business relationship into that and then going, you know what? Let's add another business into it. You're playing on hard mode. What's it been like?
Yeah, we've got better at it. So it's been a couple of years now since we've been working like both of us together on Bearkind to start with. Then we added in Candid Founders. And I'd say, again, the communication side of it is literally the most important thing. Whether you run a business together or not as a couple, I think you can do a lot just through like really open lines of communication. So we actually worked with like a business psychologist for a while when we first started like getting going on the business together, because we wanted to sit down and have someone talk us through like, right, how do we manage this? How do we communicate where our strengths and weaknesses are? As people and kind of having those talks about our roles in the business, actually like having the division of roles as well, both for us and also for the team to understand. Because to start with, we just both dived in and both of us were there. And I think everyone was like, do I just go to both of you on everything? And we realized, no, we need to divide and conquer. And that's essentially what we've done. So I'm very much on content, marketing, the website, on the Candid Founder side. I'm actually mostly on Candid Founders at the moment. Andy's more on kind of finance, running the team, some more operational role. And that actually really plays into our strengths, where I'm kind of more creative, wanting to kind of dive into lots of different things and like get my fingers in all kinds of pies. And I get really excited about like the next thing. And that's ultimately where this has come from, because I got too excited about YouTube and then what's next. And he's like structure and operations and, you know, actually making sure things are profitable. So I think our strengths play into each other very well, but it's not been easy. It is very hard doing it as a married couple, but it's just the communication side of it, I think, is something you have to work on.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you're aware of it and, you know, actively, it's something you actively work on and prioritize. And I think that's all the difference. You know, just acknowledging that this is the hard part and this is the thing that helps fix it. Immediately, it's going to go easier. Like, that's not a silver bullet, but for sure, it's a great sign.
Yeah.
I heard you mention you turned off paid ads.
Yeah.
What has been, we had a brand last summer who turned off their ads. And things really didn't change particularly. We were quite surprised by this. So what was what happened when you turned off paid ads? And by paid, we're talking about Meta, right?
Yeah, Meta. I think we still have a little bit of a trickle on Google, but not a huge spend. But yeah, Meta, we just completely switched off. We'd been scared to do it previously, but do you know what? Who scared us out of doing it was paid ad agencies. So obviously they have a reason
They don't have any bias here.
So yeah, they'd kind of said, no, you have to keep it going because it feeds things and, you know, all of that rubbish. And to be honest, we got to the end of last year on Bearkind. We hadn't quite hit the targets we wanted to for the year. So we had to kind of make some drastic changes. So again, that was another reason to kind of go full steam ahead on Candid Founders. We started looking at like where we can shuffle the team around a bit. And we removed our marketing agency at the time. So we had been working with an agency during that kind of Q4 period. They were very good, but we were like, we're not getting the AOV we want. This isn't working. So we just decided, let's just switch them off. We need to kind of go back to basics here and see where we go. Amazingly, we're up revenue-wise. Therefore, we are up profit-wise as well. So we're like, great.
Again, the trick to making more money is just to stop spending ads on Meta.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like,
it's happened more than once now.
Yeah, come on. I think someone is lying to us out there. We will probably turn them back on like just before Christmas. We've got some ads that we know work really well for us that have got great ROAS, but only in Q4. So we're like, there's just no point having them on at this time of the year. We're not a huge brand. So realistically, we don't have deep enough pockets to just let ads kind of trickle over and not be profitable. We actually need to be profit first and like really focused on that. So yes, well, one thing is growing sales. Another thing is reducing cost. So we're actually doing much better this year than we thought we would.
Hey, still struggling to increase AOV? You've built a great store, but your upsells and cross-sells, they're underperforming. That's because outdated apps rely on guesswork, and that costs you real money. Enter Zipify One-Click Upsell. Their AI-powered tech finds the highest converting upsell for every customer. No complicated setup needed. Over 10,000 Shopify stores trust OCU, and it's already generated nearly $1 billion in extra revenue. So if your upsells still run like they did 5 years ago, it's time to upgrade. Get Zipify One-Click Upsell free for 30 days at zipify.com/Kurt. That's zipify.com/KURT. Don't leave money on the table. Try AI-powered upsells today. If you were so excited about the agency business, do you ever feel like Bearkind's taking a backseat?
Yeah, it is. But it's also on purpose. I think because of the seasonality thing, we're keeping Bearkind ticking over. Like we're doing all the things that we need it to, but we realized that after nearly 4 years now of me full-time on it anyway, it's a one hell of a hamster wheel every year that you just feel you're putting everything into it and not getting much out, and it is getting trickier to manage. So I wouldn't say it's taking a backseat enough that it's not going anywhere, because actually it's doing much better and we're spending less time and money on it. So riddle me that. but it is, we've on purpose deprioritized a few things on it. We're just not being as proactive in certain areas. So we've reduced the amount we're emailing our customers. However, when it comes back around to Q4, we're doing our stock order now. We're still bringing in lots of new products. We're still stimulating our wholesale channel. So we're still keeping fair going. But it just means that all our efforts will be focused on Q4 and actually delivering for Bearkind and then also our clients' brands. And I think at the moment that is the right decision. It seems to be working. But I think with any business, it's just good to be able to kind of pivot. This is, I think, what we've been good at the last few years is just realizing very quickly what's not working and not being afraid to stop and do something slightly different with it. Turning the ads off, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to throw good money after bad, but you also want to be trying different things. It's tough. When do you know, when to cut an effort loose?
Good question. I think it's that communication piece. So Andy and I, we do this a lot, is where we will have like almost board level sessions with each other, because it's very easy to be in the weeds of your own business, right? And just go head down, just go for it and not take that step back and work out what is actually working. And I think we've got quite good at kind of taking that step back and actually taking time at least every month, please, I think people need to do, but we try and do it every week, where you are looking at like what is happening in the business right now and what is working. Being able to look at your profits, because we know revenue is vanity. So actually look at that. And we've been very, very close on that, because it would get to, Q4, everything looks amazing. Christmas is going really well. Our sales are way, way, way up. But then when you dive into it and start looking at the profit and realize that VAT, which is 20% of our sales, is going to be coming off in a quarter's time. We've got our charity donations. We've also got all of our postage costs over Christmas are huge. And that all comes out of our account in like Jan, Feb time. So you can be looking at your account thinking, wow, look at all these sales. But without actually like diving into it and realizing what money is going to be coming out of your account from a cost point of view, you could be in deep water really, really quick. And you can see how businesses fail so quickly without looking at it. So I really think it's a case of being very, very honest with yourself on the numbers and being able to react to that. So I think being as close to your numbers as possible, which I know not a lot of founders love doing. I don't, but I'm lucky Andy's like, his background is finance. I think that has been where we've been able to pivot quite quickly and avoid anything going too badly wrong.
In an e-commerce business that sells a physical good, especially, your North Star for this situation that you're talking about really is going to be unit economics, right? I need to know approximately how much money I make on selling a single pair of socks. And because you can, with acquisition costs, get into a situation where that number becomes negative, and then you're right, a business just gets, the more successful it gets, the faster it implodes. In an agency business, what is your equivalent to margin contribution?
Do you know what? I don't, we're looking at our kind of monthly recurring revenue at the moment.
That's a good one.
Yeah. As a figure. And I think we're still learning a lot. Like, as you know, we've just kind of come to this like fairly recently. We don't have a background in it. I'd say we've done very, very well on fair and we know what we're doing there. But the agency model, we're taking a lot from the industry, kind of experts on LinkedIn. So I would never say I'm an expert in this yet. We're doing a lot of reading on like how to make this work. I think for us, we're realizing that the biggest thing for us right now is getting our operations right for this. Because we're getting these good clients coming in that are willing to pay for our service. And I think that model right now, because we're currently basically borrowing Bearkind's team and we've got like upskilled them and we've got the right people to make this kind of agency team. We're now realizing that what we're aiming for really is trying to work out how many clients we can service per pod, as it were. So we've got a pod of kind of like an SEO expert, kind of a account manager, an email person, and a kind of customer service person. So we've got this little pod and we're trying to optimize that. So obviously that pod can service more clients, and then we want to add more pods so we can then service more clients. So at the moment we're going for the pod model. So we've got the monthly recurring revenue, and then we're trying to work out how many clients we can actually service. So I think it's, yeah, we definitely don't have that nailed down yet. We're still trying to work it out. And I think as agency owners, we're also very much in the weeds of these clients' accounts at the moment as well. So learning a lot. But I obviously want to get to the point where we have pods that are fairly like self-sufficient, and then we're kind of diving in and managing the pod rather than managing the clients. But that just shows where we're quite like early to it. But the clients love it because they get us like one-on-one quite a lot. So I think it's, we're definitely over-servicing clients at the moment, but I just think that is also naturally the kind of space we're in, being quite a young agency.
You know, the other metric I like, MRR is really good, you know, that whether in any business, but agency business especially, I like knowing monthly recurring revenue, that buys a lot of peace of mind. Effective hourly rate, I like. I like the pod model that you're using for, you build like, this is a team, they could service up to X clients. Okay, then here's, you know, team two could serve up to X clients. But then trying to figure out, you know, how many, that's the squishy part, because, you know, some clients require more or less effort, you know, just depending on what like their internal resources and communication is like. That's the squishy one. That's the one, yeah. I think that there's a range there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's, you know, all these clients are slightly different in nuances of what product they're selling, what market they're in, and actually their seasonality as well. You know, and obviously if we bring on a new client, there's naturally a lot more servicing burden for us up front, getting them set up, depending on how good their account is on fair at the start as well. You know, one massive part of the service that we offer is this like SEO optimization piece that we do for them on fair. So naturally some clients just have more products. So if they've got a bigger catalog, it's more of a burden on us in terms of like how many products we have to optimize. So I do think that's a piece that we're working on. And as you said, yeah, it is squishy. Having these like different levels of, and also how much that, how hands-on the founder is as well, because some will be very much in the weeds and the detail and very like back and forth on things. And then other founders are so overwhelmed and busy that they're like, please just handle this and I trust you and just update me once you've done it. So very, very different personalities in founders as well, which is very interesting. But it works in our favor because we're founders ourselves. We run our own product business. So we're coming to it from a level of understanding, you know, where their head is at. And it does build trust and credibility with the clients as well, because they can see that we're also in the space.
Yeah, you have the same, you know, very similar lived experience. It's a, yes, you're able to, yeah, relate and speak the language. I think that helps a lot too.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. I could go over agency service businesses all day, but I want to know,
yeah,
what advice do you give to brands now who are considering fair?
Yeah. So I mean, if you're considering it and not sure whether to do it, I'd always just say give it a try, because you're not really going to lose much, I think. So the fares model, their commission model, it makes it sound really expensive, like upfront. So basically the marketplace, if they find you a customer through their algorithm, so someone who'd not come across you before, they find you on fare, they purchase your products, first order is 25% commission. If they reorder, it's 15% commission. But there is another bucket where if you bring that a customer, so if you find someone, whether at a trade show or you've approached them online, you bring them into the platform and you sell through like your link or QR code or whatever, however you choose to do it, 0% commission. So actually over time, and we've built a nice shiny tool that like basically downloads all your fare data and then analyzes your customer spend and all of this, and also your kind of actual commission rate. Ours is sitting at about 10% total. Not 25% that you kind of that headline figure that you hear and get scared of. But actually, because we've done a lot of work to bring in lots of our own customers and also bring in a lot of return business, the 25% is actually quite a small proportion of our pot of customers. So I'd say, one, don't be scared off by that headline figure, because it doesn't always end up being that much. And two, it is an algorithm, so learn how to play the game. It's you do have to put work and do SEO optimization and actually use the platform and message your customers through it. You can't really just sit there and just leave your brand to kind of tick over anymore. Maybe you could have done back in the day when it was an earlier platform, but it's quite a saturated marketplace now. So I just really recommend actually like going in and thinking, what are you going to do? What work are you going to do for your brand? If you're lucky enough to have someone in your team to run the account for you, there's actually so many kind of micro optimizations you can make. And that's where I'd really recommend looking at our YouTube. We've got loads of guidance on there on how to do it for yourself. You don't even need to come to us directly. Just go to the YouTube, which is Candid Founders. And there's loads of advice on there.
Yeah, in the show notes, I will include your Candid Founders YouTube channel, Candid Founders website, a couple links for Fair Wholesale on Shopify, and of course, Bear Kind, where we can get sweet bamboo turtle socks.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Lucy Jeffrey, any place else people should connect with you?
Oh, do reach out on LinkedIn. Yeah, if you've listened to this podcast and want to chat about anything, I'm very active on LinkedIn. But yeah, it's mainly YouTube, really. This is where I'm like putting most of my content. So please do check it out. If you're on Fair and struggling with it, or think you don't have the bandwidth for it, but see it as an opportunity, which I really think it is. Reach out to us. We'd be happy to help.
Wonderful. And you know what? I added your LinkedIn to the show notes and I connected with you.
Amazing.
So we're now LinkedIn friends. Lucy Jeffrey, Bear Kind, Candid Founders, thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.